18. Archon Thane's words could barely be heard for all the outcries of shame and disapproval. Regardless, he stood tall before his 62 peers, most of whom were female, proudly displaying the bruises he had earned in the honor duel with Isolde, and convincingly unapologetic for having gambled away Virgil's vote on the outcome of that contest. Thane's audacity was not surprising, but where Leia had expected bitterness and sarcasm, his words in support of the New Republic sounded almost sincere. Many in the vast hall were certain that Virgil's vote would provide Tenennial Jo with the majority she needed to mandate military action against the Yuuzhan Vong. But Leia no longer had a clear sense of her own objectives. While the consortium's entry into the war might turn out to be pivotal, allegations of personal interest and conspiracy threatened to undermine not only the political process, but also the long-standing alliance between the consortium and the New Republic. To the exasperation of C-3PO, who insisted on trying to match her long strides and divine her sudden about-faces, Leia paced nervously behind the scenes in a small chamber that looked out on the speaker's rostrum. If nothing else, she told herself, the vote would at least conclude her visit to Hapes, which had become more trying as the days had worn on, both at Reef Fortress and the Fountain Palace. She felt hopelessly removed from the activities that had become most important to her. Hapes had begun to seem a place of exile, and an imaginary one at that, a land of dragons and rainbow gems, of trees of wisdom and guns of command. And the brawl between Isolde and Thane had been one thing too much. She had yet to spend any private time with the prince, and if she had her way, she wouldn't. From the start, she had feared that Isolde had misconstrued the nature of her mission to Hapes, and Ta'a Choom's telling her that she would have been an ideal wife for him had only made things more awkward and complicated. The fate of the galaxy no longer turned on courtly intrigues, and Leia wanted no part of the Hapens' enslavement to them. Marooned in the past, in a swirl of distant memories, she longed more than anything to hear from Han. She knew that Jaina was with Rogue Squadron, and that Anakin and Jason were bound for the Corellian system, if they weren't there already, but she had no idea where Han was. Countless times each day, he would come swaggering into her thoughts, quick to bring disarray. Although it wasn't the Han of the past several months she saw, but the scoundrel she had gradually fallen in love with. The Han who had thrown her a wink on being decorated for his unexpected actions during the Battle of Yavin. The Han who had acknowledged her first confession of love with a reply that managed to be both heartfelt and smug. The Han she had rendered speechless with the disclosure that Luke was her brother. Despite the damage to his roguish reputation, a demonstration of real concern might inflict, there was no excusing his continued silence, and Leia was as angry at him as she was worried. A new uproar filled the hall. Leia saw that it was Isolde who now stood before the delegates. Like Thane, the prince was all but basking in the contentious mix of esteem and condemnation that greeted him, his face puffy with contusions and one arm bandaged. No Bacta treatments for the real men of Hapes, Leia thought. Everyone who has wished to be heard on the issue of the consortium pledging support to the New Republic has been heard. Isolde began when the commotion in the hall had settled. It's clear that we have no consensus on this issue, and the vote is certain to be close. The decision to go to war is never an easy one, and our decision this day is made all the more difficult because we appear to be safely distanced from that war. But bear in mind the counsel of Ambassador Organa Solo. This quiet will not endure. The light that shines on the consortium today could very well be eclipsed tomorrow, and any battles avoided will ultimately have to be fought, perhaps by us alone. I won't stand here and reiterate the many arguments that have been presented, denigrating one stance or bolstering another. I ask only that each of you eschew politics and vote the will of the people you represent. That is our commitment, and by doing so, we vote our conscience. The process was infuriatingly meticulous. With Tenennial Joe and her attendants looking on from a balcony, voting was done by hand rather than electronically, with representatives bringing forth their finest heirloom quills and employing their most baroque calligraphy. The votes, sometimes missives, were read and tallied by a panel of senescent judges. Then the results were hand-delivered to the royal balcony in the form of a natural fiber scroll resting on an outsized shimmer silk pillow. The Queen Mother herself made the announcement. By a vote of 32 in favor to 31 opposed, the consortium avows to support the new republic in its just and decisive actions against the Yuuzhan Vong. Isolde's champions cheered and his detractors railed. It was a long while before Tenennial Joe could restore order. "The vote is concluded," she said at last. "I ask now that personal differences be set aside and the word of law accepted, so that we may enter into this momentous resolution in a spirit of union." The grumbling gradually subsided, and delegates shook hands or embraced one another ceremoniously. The sudden fellowship struck Leia as counterfeit as an arranged marriage. "Mistress," C-3PO said with a touch of alarm, "the prince approaches." Turning, Leia saw a beaming Isolde marching toward her, throwing his richly embroidered cloak over one shoulder. For a moment she feared that he was actually going to scoop her up and twirl her around, but he came to a halt just out of arm's reach. "We won the day, Leia. In spite of everything, we won the day." He scanned the crowded hall until he located Archon Thane, then motioned at him with his chin. "Look how Thane sulks. If he'd had his way, the vote would have been reversed." He swung to Leia. "You realize it was his plan all along to insult you, then best me in combat after I had agreed to his wager. But we prevailed." Leia stared at him with mounting disquiet. "The last thing I wanted was for this decision to hinge on the outcome of a grudge match, Isolde." His gleaming hero's smile held. "Perhaps not, but that is often the way on Hapes. And besides, you know that I wouldn't have done any less for you." "But I don't want you doing this for me any more than I wanted you fighting to protect my honor." Isolde regarded her quizzically. "Who was I fighting for, if not you? Why did you come to me?" "I came to Hapes, Isolde, as an envoy of the new republic. That's the truth of it." "Of course you did, and you were right to come here." He eased the moment with an understanding smile. "All that aside, you have your wish. We stand side by side in battle." Leia's attempt to emulate his expression failed, as something that had been at the edge of her consciousness all week long suddenly rushed to mind. Scarcely 8 years earlier, with many of the warships of the New Republic fleet undergoing repairs and upgrades, Luke had been asked by the Senate to appeal to the Bokkarans for help in putting an end to a rebellion in the Corellian sector. More to the point, Luke had been asked to appeal to his close friend, Garriel Captison, even though she had retired from public service after the death of her husband, former Imperial Pater Thanis. Garriel had pledged her support, and with the aid of several Bokkaran naval vessels, the crisis had been resolved. But at a terrible cost. Garriel, Bokkaran Admiral Ocelage, and thousands more had been killed. Luke still spoke of his guilt, especially after visits with Garriel's young daughter, Melinza, whom he had pledged to keep safe. In the wake of recollection, something even more terrible began to blossom in Leia's mind. Her heart pounded and her forehead beaded with sweat. Her sight blurred at the edges, sounds grew faint, and she reached out for Isolde's arm to steady herself. She shut her eyes briefly, and into the darkness raced a ferocious vision of warships speared by brilliant light, of expanding explosions and the cries of dying thousands, of starfighters vaporized, blinding eruptions of fire, bodies floating still in a void, a world ablaze. "Leia, what is it?" Isolde asked, holding her upright. "Leia?" Coming back to herself almost as quickly as she had become lost, she took a calming breath and eased out of his hold. Then she gaped at him, wide-eyed. "You can't do this, Isolde. You mustn't join us. His brow furrowed. What are you talking about? The vote has been taken. The matter is already decided. Then call for a revote. Tell everyone you've rethought Hapes's position. Are you mad? Do you know what you're asking of me? Isildur, you must listen to me. The decision has been made. Leia wanted desperately to carry on the fight, but all words fled her. She stared, then touched her fingers to her forehead. Isildur was gazing at her knowingly. You're worried that something will go wrong, he said. And you don't want the responsibility of having decided our fate. But you needn't worry. We made our pledge free and clear. We know exactly what we're getting into. This is in our blood, Leia. You need never fear on our account. But is there a chance that Yuuzhan Vong will overlook us? She considered it. Probably not. Then what choice do we have? Do we fight the invaders alongside you and avail ourselves of greater numbers, or wait to be attacked and be forced to engage them in our own space with only what ships we have? She compressed her lips and nodded. You're right. She managed a faint smile. Isildur, I'm sorry for what I said earlier. He waved away the apology. Words are of no importance. What is that we always remain friends. Done. He offered her his arm and they walked a few paces, much to the obvious dismay of C-3PO. I believe your droid is agitated, Isildur said quietly. Leia laughed. I'm sure he is. 3PO was very much Han's supporter when you were crazy enough to consider me fit to be a queen mother. Isildur laughed shortly, then stopped to gaze at her. Leia, as a friend, may I ask you something? You've been preoccupied for the whole of your stay here. Each time I've attempted to visit you, you've avoided me. Is something wrong, between us or otherwise?
I have been distracted, she conceded.
May I know the reason? She forced a breath.
I wouldn't know where to begin.
My mother once told me that when a Jedi is distracted, when she loses her focus, she becomes vulnerable.
I'm not a Jedi.
But you are as strong in the Force as any of them. What is it, Leia? Leia's eyes narrowed perceptibly.
We're in real danger, Isildur. We're in danger of losing everything we've fought to attain since the defeat of the Empire.
Are you saying that the Yuuzhan Vong cannot be defeated? She took a moment.
I'm not sure. I see a long road ahead of us.
How clearly do you see this road? She shook her head.
Not clearly enough to know where all the rough spots lie.
They resumed walking without speaking. Will you accompany me to Coruscant aboard my personal ship? Isildur asked finally.
What about Tenennial Joe?
She will remain on Hapes, Isildur said flatly. Once more the vision stormed through Leia's mind, then abated.
What light was she seeing? What world was she seeing? Of course I will, she said after a moment.
With the Falcon safely docked, Han and Droma cleared ruined customs and hastened for the spaceport terminal. If not for the crowds, they might have sprinted. Hold on a heartbeat, Han said when Droma was about to navigate the crowd on hands and knees. Snatching the Rin by the back of his vest, he set him on his feet, then decorously adjusted the fit of the frayed garment while he spoke. Your clanmates wouldn't be so desperate to get off-world that they'd hook up with a bunch of space-trash hijackers and mercenaries. They're smarter than that, right? Droma tugged at his mustache.
They're plenty clever, but even the quickest can be outsmarted when the situation looks hopeless. Both Gaff and Melisma detest confinement. Gaff was once in jail and...
Han started shaking his head. That's not the answer I want to hear. Droma fell silent, then nodded in understanding.
My clanmates take up with a bunch of space-trash hijackers? They're far too clever. In fact, I'm certain they're still on ruin, somewhere, and that we've arrived well in time to save them.
Han exhaled. That's a relief. They had been having the same conversation since leaving Tholaten.
The Weequay security chief had been too sly to supply them with the names of his cohorts who had gone to ruin, or with the name of their ship. But the ruin scam had come up several times in casual conversation among Esau's Ridges mechanics and ne'er-do-wells, and Han had a pretty good idea of the caliber of folks he and Droma were dealing with. Even if the hijackers who had come to ruin weren't working directly for the Yuuzhan Vong, they were likely to be well-armed and dangerous, much like the members of the Peace Brigade with whom Han and Droma had tangled aboard the Queen of Empire, and with whom neither wished to tangle again. Ruin Spaceport had a pace all its own. With thousands of refugees pouring in from scores of occupied worlds, there were far more comings than goings. But Salish Ag was somehow managing to keep the transfer process running smoothly and efficiently. Dozens of species-specific booths lined the terminal walls, and a fleet of surface vehicles waited outside the terminal to convey refugees to one camp or another. Locating refugees, though, was another matter. At a human-staffed information booth, Han and Droma discovered listings for over 100 separate exile facilities, some only a few kilometers away and others on the far side of the world. "Searching every camp will take longer than we've got," Han fumed. "There's got to be an easier way." "Try the central data bank," a droid voice said behind him. "Whoever you're looking for might be listed there." Han turned and found himself face to face with an aged droid built roughly along human lines, though stockier and no taller than Droma. In sore need of paint and bodywork, the machine was long-armed and barrel-chested, with a rounded head that was as primitive in design as the servo motors that operated its limbs. "Ballocks?" Han said in disbelief. The droid's unblinking red photoreceptors fixed on him.
"I beg your pardon, sir."
"You're a labor droid, aren't you? A BLX?"
"A BLX?" the droid said peevishly. "Though we both happen to be products of Servo Droid Incorporated, I'm a BFL. Baffle to you, good sir."
"Baffle?" Han's eyebrows arched in skeptical surprise, then his eyes narrowed appraisingly. "Who are you kidding? You're telling me you've never spent time in the corporate sector?"
"Thank the Maker, no. Why, save for being activated at the Fondor shipyards, I've never even been outside the core. To the best of my memory, that is."
Han refused to buy it. With Droma looking on, he circled Baffle, taking in the set of the droid's vocabulator grill and its stiff way of moving. "You were never the property of a tech named Doc Vandengant?" Baffle shook his head.
"The name is new to me."
Without warning, Han rapped his fist against the droid's chest plastron, eliciting a hollow sound. "You sure you never carried another droid in there? Cubicle thing no bigger than this?" Han spread his hands a few centimeters apart. "But smart as a whip."
"Another droid? Certainly not. What do you take me for?"
Han stroked his beard, shook his head, then snorted a laugh. "You could have fooled me." Baffle bowed slightly.
"I'm flattered that I remind you of someone, sir. I think."
"Now, what's this about a central database?" The droid directed them to a computer terminal, at which several folks were queued. Han and Droma planted themselves at the end of the line, behind a Duros couple, and waited while everyone had a go at getting the machine to cooperate. Han handled the input when they finally reached the head of the line.
"Refugees are grouped by species," he said, frowning. "But the Rin aren't even listed."
"Try other," Baffle suggested.
Droma smirked. "The droid's right. Allow me to do the honors." Han moved away from the keyboard but kept his eyes on the display screen.
"Here we are," Droma said. "Just where we usually show up. Between Ribet and Saddle. And my clanmates are here."
He turned excitedly to Han.
"Well, five of them at any rate.
Your sister with them?" Droma read over the list again, then shook his head.
"Leia was correct, I'm afraid. Saffa must have been left behind on Gindyne."
Han made his lips a thin line.
"We'll find her next. Where are the others?"
"Facility 17, along with 32 other Rin."
"Oh, I know that camp well, sirs," Baffle said.
Several of my peers and counterparts have had occasion to work there. Han swung to the droid.
What's the quickest way to get there?
In my cab.
You're a driver?
Baffle pointed out the terminal window to a battered Soro Sub land speeder.
Just there, sir. The one lacking a proper windscreen and in need of paint.
Han glanced from the land speeder to the dented and spot-welded droid.
Looks like you and your vehicle get your work done at the same mechanic shop. Will that thing make it to Facility 17?
No problem at all, sir. The camp is actually within walking distance. For those with sufficient time, that is.
The three of them headed out to the cab. Baffle clambered into the open-air operator's perch and got the aft-mounted repulsor lift generator and outboard turbines running.
When Han and Droma were cinched into the molded seats below the perch, the droid set off down a well-maintained road that coursed between immaculately cultivated fields. Through gaps in the topiary shrubs that lined the road, Han could see droids of endless variety, though far fewer than he was accustomed to seeing on similar agricultural worlds.
"Why aren't you out there with the others?" he shouted to Baffle.
"Oh, I'm too old for that sort of work, sir."
Salish sidelined you, huh?
Basically, yes. Ever since Salish Ag offered to accept refugees, Ruin has become a rather chaotic environment. So I was reassigned to function as the driver of this reliable, if somewhat woebegone, vehicle.
Seems to be a lot more people coming than going, Han said.
That's very observant of you, sir. In fact, many refugees have become so enamored of Ruin, they have remained on world to work for Salish Ag.
Han and Droma exchanged puzzled looks. To work for Salish? Han said. Doing what?
Why, field work, sir. Thanks to Ruin's climate control station, labor is a pleasurable enterprise for many folks.
Han uttered a laugh. That's crazy. Salish has an army of droids at its disposal.
They do, sir, it's true. But Salish Ag has recently developed a preference for living workers.
Again, Han glanced at Droma, who shrugged.
I just got here, remember?
The Wren said. Han might have pursued the topic with Baffle, but just then the refugee camp came into view around a wide turn.
Facility 17, good sirs.
The droid conveyed them right to the gate, where access to the camp was by way of a turret-like security booth. Han tapped his knuckles against the booth's transparisteel window to draw the attention of a thick-set guard inside. The uniformed man stuck his scarred face outside the window, got an eyeful of Han and Droma, and scowled.
"Get a load of this," he said to someone else in the booth.
Shortly, a woman joined him at the window, giving Han and Droma the same once-over.
"What's your business here?"
"We're looking for a couple of friends," Han told them.
"Aren't we all?" the man said in self-amusement. "A group of Wren," Han went on. "They would have arrived maybe 2 standard weeks ago."
"A group of Wren, you say?"
The guard jerked a thumb at Droma.
"Like this one?"
Han rolled his tongue around in his cheek.
"That's right, like this one. If you've got a problem with him, maybe you should step outside so we can all discuss it."
The guard grinned down at him.
"I don't have a problem, big guy, but your little pal here does."
Han heard the whirring of charging blasters and spun around to find half a dozen uniformed guards moving in on the booth from 3 sides. Cautiously, he raised his hands to the back of his head, and Droma did the same.
"We didn't come looking for trouble," Han said. "It's like I told the welcome committee. We're just looking for a couple of friends."
The lead guard ignored him and waved his blaster at Droma.
"Step to one side."
When Droma did, the guard added,
"You're under arrest."
Han did a double take.
"Arrest? On what charge? We haven't even been here long enough to litter."
With 4 blasters trained on Droma and 2 on Han, the lead guard snapped a pair of cylindrical stun cuffs around Droma's wrists.
"The charge is forgery of official documents," he said to Han. "And if you've got any sense, you'll get off Ruin before we haul you in as an accessory after the fact."